Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be talking with a blind TV reporter, and he also plays ice hockey with a bunch of other visually impaired folks on the side.
We'll talk with Gary Steves, who does his TV reporting for Accessible Media Incorporated in Canada, about both of those. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Gary Steves. Do you have any advice or suggestions for anybody else who's visually impaired who might be interested in becoming a reporter?
It's kind of the same advice that I would give about anything, really. Is I don't think anything is impossible, but there's often kind of people's own prejudice towards people doing jobs. So, you know, if you're interested in doing something, the world right now is kind of very cool because with the internet, you know, doing podcasts or even, you know, if you have a friend with a camera doing YouTube things, there's nothing stopping anybody from developing those skills on their own and learning those skills. And also, if you're interested in broadcasting and stuff like that, like, you know, if you want to go to school for it, like, make it happen. Like, don't let people turn you down just because you're blind. I mean, that's kind of a silly thing. There'll be challenges, but anytime you go to school to study anything or try to learn any skill when you're visually impaired or blind, there's always challenges, but there's always usually solutions as well. And just have to be creative to figure them out. So my advice I give to anybody is find out what it is you're really good at, you really like to do, and you'll have way more chance of being successful at it, even if it's something a bit kind of outside what people think a person with your quote unquote disability can do. You don't know until you go and put some effort in and try it, and you'll be amazed. I just kind of believe you create your own luck a lot of times. I mean, I didn't ever think I'd end up doing reporting on TV and being interviewed on TV and all the stuff that I'm doing. It's just that I was kind of out in the world doing stuff, and people saw me doing other things that I was doing and thought I'd be good at this and asked me to come and do it. So a lot of times I think we have to kind of get out of our comfort zones and get out of our, you know, our houses and just be out there in the world interacting with people and networking and trying the things we like and the things we want to do, and opportunities will appear.
And so many of the people we've interviewed through the years give very similar advice. They may give it in different words, but it all comes from having that can-do attitude and saying, I'm not going to let any disability stop me from doing what I really want to do, and I'll find a way to do it.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Gary Steves.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, my name is Gary Steves. Today we'll be talking about the fact that I'm a visually impaired reporter for Accessible Media. But my regular job, I guess, that pays more of my bills is I'm a social worker at an extended care facility with seniors. For hobbies, I'm quite involved in blind ice hockey in Canada, and we're trying to get ice hockey into the Paralympics in around 2022. And music is my other big hobby, I guess. I play drums in a classic rock cover band.
Wow, great. You sound like a very busy person.
Yeah, that's the problem. I like to do all these things, but there's no time for them all.
And of course, we don't have time to talk about all of that in this show, but towards the end, we will be talking about his involvement in ice hockey.
So Gary, what is the nature of your visual impairment?
So what I have is a version of retinitis pigmentosa, RP. Currently, I have light perception in my right eye and a pinhole kind of vision in my left eye. But when I was a child, I actually had quite a bit more vision. I could see very clearly in my central vision, slightly more than the size of a person's head from across the table. And then as I got older, that went down to kind of an area of a person's eyes in my 20s. And then in my 30s is when my right eye sort of decreased in its ability. And I didn't realize how good my right eye was, but apparently it was my really good eye. So that changed a lot of things for me when that kind of went downhill a bit. But, you know, we find ways to adapt and make things work for ourselves.
And are you a user of Braille or canes, screen readers, things like that?
Yes, I use all of those things in different ways. I also have a guide dog. I got a standard poodle guide dog just about 3 years ago now. He's my first dog. That was one adaptation that took me a while to get around to, but I've been using a cane since I was about 18. And for using stuff at work here, for instance, as I said, I'm a social worker, my main job. Basically, I use Braille as a way of labeling things. So I get, you know, a piece of paper, you know, Joe Blow's income tax form. I scan it so I can read it. I type up a Braille label, snap that to it, put it in my file. So if a sighted person, a colleague comes along and needs to see Joe Blow's tax forms, I can just pull that out of the file, not need to use their eyes to find it. So I don't read Braille particularly well, but I read it well enough to use it for that and can use a Brailler to type these things out. And of course, you know, with my level sight, I use screen reading technology. So currently I'm using JAWS from Freedom Scientific, and I have a Android phone. So it has a touchscreen phone. It has TalkBack kind of built into the Android operating system.
I'm actually curious. Most guide dogs in the United States tend to be labs. And you have a poodle, which I've never seen a poodle guide dog. Is there something special about that or a story behind it?
Yes, there's something very special about my dog. He's a crazy. Really, why I wanted a poodle is two reasons. One is I work as a social worker mostly, so I wanted a dog that didn't shed just to avoid kind of allergy issues.
Not yours, your clients.
Not mine, no. Poodles are more hypoallergenic. People can be allergic to poodles, but it's just not as common because they don't shed. And the other funny reason, I think, is that I recall when I was a kid, like a really, really young kid, like a, you know, almost a baby, that I had a stuffed animal that was given to me. And looking back on it, I think it probably was a poodle. I mean, obviously, all kinds of dogs, but when I think of what a dog looks like or feels like, that's what came to mind. And Bogart being slightly bigger than a stuffed animal I had and eats more, but he feels that way. His deep chest, long nose, floppy ears. So maybe that's some sort of weird subconscious thing that stuck in my head. I don't know.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is being a blind on-air reporter. And we'll start by learning about Accessible Media Incorporated, otherwise known as AMI. Can you talk just a little bit about AMI, the company that you do the reporting through?
Certainly. AMI is a very unique company in around the world, I believe. The station was mandated by the CRTC, which is a government body, controls our media stuff up here. And basically, there was a movement to have a channel that had description on the programming, because as you guys might know, audio description or video description is becoming more common in TV than it used to be, but it's certainly not anywhere where it needs to be if you consider closed captioning as an example. So this station has open closed captioning, open description. So all their shows they air on the channel have description. You don't have to turn on anything on your digital box, your TV, or, you know, get some friend to help you get all that going. You just turn on the channel and all the programming has description. So that was one of the key things. The other thing was developing their own programming. So what they've done is they have what they call local broadcasting centers, and there's 7 or 8 of them now. We've kind of been expanding a little bit. And basically, they're kind of in the main cities. What they do at the local broadcasting centers, AMI does not have any commercials because we get our money through subsidies from the cable companies. Therefore, they have basically local reporting units that go out and do stories, local current events, different things going on. I was just at an event, I think covered a thing yesterday. It was an art installation where everything had been put Braille labels on it, and it was kind of getting a point across about not being able to see, but it's a story that wouldn't get told too many other places, I don't think. And basically what they have is blind reporters doing all the on-air reporting. So I'm the person on air reading the scripts, interviewing the people, and then we have a producer and a cameraman that come out and do the shoots with us. It's very unique. It's a really unique opportunity, and it's, you know, amazing way to kind of develop skills. There's not a kind of a career path for a blind journalist. I mean, I think if you said that to some people, they'd kind of go, how do you do that? I mean, I actually got interviewed by somebody on one of our local TV stations, and one of his questions is, how can a blind person be a journalist? And my answer was like, well, why not, right? I mean, that's a silly question, which he realized.
Yeah, he didn't leave that part in the interview. I saw that one on YouTube.
Yes, you know, it's been wonderful opportunities for me. I started back in 2010, and that's, for those who might recall, is when the Olympics and Paralympics for the Winter Games were in Vancouver, and that was a really big party. So my kind of first opportunities to go and interview people were athletes. I remember how surreal it was. It was after the gold medal game where the American sledge hockey team had won gold, and waiting in the, they call it the pit, where you interview the athletes to interview the goalie, because I mentioned before I play blind hockey and I'm a goalie, so I was really keen on talking to the guy. He didn't let in any goals in the Paralympics that year. And, you know, I'm waiting in the booth. I was told I have to wait. He's talking to NBC, and I'm like waiting in the booth beside NBC. And this is one of my, not my first interview I was doing, but, you know, pretty early in my day. So it was surreal and kind of, you know, totally exciting, obviously. And it's only gotten better since then.
Now, that's pretty cool. Have you always been interested in journalism and broadcasting?
It was something I had a bit of interest in, but to be honest, no, I wasn't really pursuing that. I mean, there's a humorous thing I was telling a friend of mine yesterday is that I think it was back when I was in university, I was, you know, quite a bit younger, and I had done some interest and aptitudes testing. Those are always great things to do, right? Because I probably had just struggled with math classes, I think. So I was curious if I was doing the right thing. What came up on top of things that I, careers that I should really look at were social work and broadcasting. And, you know, 20 years later, I've managed to get both of those into my life. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, how funny. You know, I had a friend in high school, and he was very good at science and math, and we just assumed he was going to be a scientist or something like that. And he took one of these aptitude tests, and it turned out they said he was best at being a mortician. And he said, that's it. The aptitude test said I'm going to be a mortician. That's what I'm going to do. And I met him at our 30th high school reunion several years ago. Sure enough, he's running a bunch of mortuaries on the east coast of the United States.
Yeah, so if we only knew who did these tests, we could give the company a big plug for getting it right, eh?
Yeah, I guess.
So I'm curious, you talk about all of the programming from AMI, and I understand they broadcast both television and radio. Is it possible for people outside their broadcast areas to get any of that programming, say, over the internet?
I believe so. I know they're working right now on the TV side to get more going on, but I'm pretty sure if you go to ami.ca that you'll be able to check out. It's called AMI Audio, is the sort of the audio side of it rather than the TV side. And you can download or listen to different shows that have been on air over the last, you know, I think it's all archived there, I believe. So, and also for some of the pieces, like the ones I do, the short ones, they do have a YouTube channel as well. So you can go onto YouTube and type Accessible Media or AMI and check out some of the stuff like that.
So is AMI a commercial company, or is this publicly chartered, sort of like the public radio and TV in the United States?
I think it's a bit different from the public radio. So it's a nonprofit. And as I said, most of the funding comes from a subsidized or a levy on the cable subscribers. So many cents per person subscribed to digital cable in Canada goes towards AMI. Mm-hmm. And with the mandate that they have to provide these kind of services.
Now, in the U.S., some of the radio reading services are only broadcast to people who have special receivers because they often will broadcast a lot of copyrighted material and the like. Is that the case here, or can anybody listen to these services?
No, in Canada, the cable stations are mandated to have those channels, so we're trying to get it the same across the country. It's not on all the different providers yet, but on several of them, it's 888 is the channel for the TV, and 889 is the channel for the audio. You know, like I say, you just turn on your TV, and you go to the channel for AMI in your area, and you either get the TV on one or the audio on the other. That's the amazing thing about it. It's nothing special required.
Getting back to that story you told earlier about the interviewer asking you, well, how could a blind person be a TV reporter? And you said, why not? Well, that's kind of our attitude. Why not? But even with that attitude, are there any special challenges that you've come across because you are blind as a TV reporter?
Oh, I think so. I mean, as everybody, you know, people who are visually impaired will know and others might understand. I mean, obviously there's different ways of doing things. So like a couple of the challenges, like a simple one is to make sure I'm looking at the camera. So before I start my lines, I always have to kind of check in with the camera guy, like, am I looking at you? So we develop little systems for doing that. The other hard part, I guess, and I, you know, not being a sighted person, I don't know how different it is, but basically memorization and stuff. We can't ever use cheat sheets. You know, we don't ever have like a piece of paper below the camera line that I can look at, kind of thing. And so that just means, you know, memorization is very important. The challenge I find is taking the memorized words you have and then learning how to deliver those in a natural sounding way and not sounding like I'm just memorized some words and here they are back to you, kind of thing. And that's a challenge, actually, or learning the skills, because something we do now a lot more is when we interview a person, we do the interview, the camera is kind of focused on the back of my head and the person, so you see all the person, not me. Then we turn the camera around and do re-asks, and basically then I ask my questions again, and I find it really difficult to ask my questions again when I'm not talking to anybody in a really natural way, as if, you know, the same way they were asked in the interview process. So it's a lot of skills that, you know, people go to school for years to do this. And admittedly, a lot of us, we're learning on the job because we just kind of got the opportunity to do this. And it's an awesome opportunity, but there's lots of things we have to figure out for sure.
And I would guess some of that's common even for people with no visual problems to be reading material and make it sound natural. I'm always impressed what news reporters and the like can get through and make it sound like it's just off the top of their head. But I'm sure there's an art to that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think other things too that come up is trying to look natural and stuff like that too. So something, you know, it's come up with some of our reporters, and we've talked about this, and maybe because I've studied social work, I think about it more too, is, you know, issues around body language and stuff like that. For somebody maybe has been totally blind their whole life, helping them understand. We're doing a shoot once with one of our fellow reporters, and she was standing very stiffly talking to the person because, you know, she didn't want to move her hands around, I think, because not knowing what she was going to bump into or hit or whatever. And so, you know, also trying to find ways to make sure we don't look different, I guess, you know, when we're doing our reporting and stuff. And, you know, we all have to learn kind of how to express ourselves.
Well, but I think that's an interesting concept. I'm blind, but I used to be able to see when I was younger. My parents were very good about telling me to look into people's faces, for example. And even though I can't see people's faces, many people don't realize I'm blind because I wear glasses for protection. And it's just because I'm looking at them. And many blind people may not do that. They may just look in an alternate direction. Or some of the body language, they've never seen what kind of natural body language is like. And so they don't assimilate those behaviors.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of simple example of that is I can imagine for myself, like when I know there's wine glasses on the table, how do I move myself around, right? It's like exceptionally cautiously. And if you think of it in a bigger picture of the world, then sometimes we don't know what's around us. Or it's a tough topic to have, I think, because first of all, so many people with vision impairment who are blind do it very well. But it's also, I think, a challenging topic to have because you don't want to offend anybody, but you also kind of want to help people to fit into the sighted world in the sense that you don't want to stand out because you're doing something outrageously different.
Mm-hmm. So do you ever get any issues where people you're interviewing with or other people outside your organization with whom you have to interact have some kind of concerns about the visual impairments?
No, I don't think so. I think most people find it really, really interesting, actually. And I guess like it's the whole concept, like, why couldn't you do that? I mean, I always make little jokes. We have a windsock on our microphone, so I always tell them it's a pad, so in case I bump you in the head with the microphone when I'm trying to talk to you. But a little levity, but basically I explain to people that I can't see. So, you know, we're going to check the mic placement and that kind of stuff and kind of let them know, you know, what's going on. My guide dog, actually, he's very good at getting all the attention from people, basically. So he kind of helps diffuse all the moments, and people are very interested in the dog and stuff. So it's a good icebreaker before we do our interviews.
Sometimes those icebreakers can be important, and I imagine the dog does a good job of that, or sometimes a little humor, as you say.
Yeah, actually, I had the opportunity with AMI to go and cover the Paralympics last year in London, and it was like as you can imagine, awesome opportunity. And I decided to take Bogart with me because two reasons. I thought he could help me find the doors, but I also thought he could help kind of literally open the doors because it is such an icebreaker, and people are so curious about the dogs. I mean, we had like a situation once where trying to find, you know, the right way to get into the building to get our accreditation and stuff. And we were lost, of course, and run into these volunteer security, like people guarding the little barricades and stuff. And so I let them pet Bogart with his harness on, which we don't often do, but I knew it was going to have a benefit to us. And sure enough, they love the dog. And then like, how do we get in there? And like, oh, we're not supposed to take you this way, but we'll take you this way. And then just, you know, like I said, he opened doors for us and helped us, you know, get around places, and just people become nicer when there's a dog. It's too bad we're not like that with people all the time, but it's true. They're just, dogs just make people nicer, I find.
Maybe we should all have dogs.
Maybe, eh?
So has Bogart ever created any problems or humorous situations?
Oh, there's been, yes, a couple of times. I remember once I was doing an interview at a disabled film festival that was opening up, and I was interviewing some fellow, and it's going very well. And I guess somebody walked in with a service dog in training. And Bogart, one of his little foibles he has is a bit of a dog distraction foible. So, yeah, it's like in the middle of my interview, and this guy says, the guy's interviewing, actually said something interesting. And then Bogart let a whole couple of barks in a row, and I was saying, well, see, my dog agrees with what you were saying. That's a very positive thought. But, of course, we end up not being able to use that little bit because of Bogart's barking in it. So it was quite humorous.
Can't cut that one out of the edit, huh?
The other funny one I forgot was from London. I was telling that to a person who interviewed me recently, where we're doing a shoot. So we kind of do these intros and extras, and we have different backdrops and all that. And there was this band playing on the plaza area. So we thought we'd go talk to them and see if they'd let us use them as our extra. So I'd do my little blurb, and then I'd finish my blurb and, you know, kind of say, take it away, boys. And I'd step out of the shot and they'd start playing their music. So we did that, except we were using wired microphones because the wireless codes, I guess, were different in the UK. There was different issues. So we had a wired microphone. So I do my bit, and, you know, we're in a bit of a hurry. So I was happy I got it in the first take. And I say, you know, take it away, boys. And I step off to my right. And all of a sudden, Bogart is leaping into the frame because I guess he tripped over the microphone wire and had to jump up in the air to get over it.
Oh, jeez.
So you see this shot of me walking aside, and then the band starts and a dog leaping into the frame and diving out of the frame. So it was quite a cute picture, apparently. It's nothing really major ever, to be honest, and it's often quite humorous. But I know one thing we do when you're recording a piece is that when you're done in that area, you take about 30 seconds of sound just to use for editing, so you get the soundscape of the place. And it seems that every time we do that, everybody gets all nice and quiet, and we're hearing the sound of the room, and then all of a sudden Bogart has to lay down, so you hear a jingle, jingle, jangle, you know, sigh.
Oh, how funny.
So it's just his thing. Once it gets quiet, I guess he feels that we're done working or something. I don't know.
You're a pretty busy guy. What motivates you to keep doing the TV reporting?
That's the thing, is like, even when you get like a story, thinking, okay, well, that, yeah, it's okay. That'll be sort of interesting. And then you get there and just you meet the people and you become so interested in the story, which you thought was, you didn't know how it was going to turn out, really, to be honest. And different things too. Like, I remember in London, the Paralympics, like, there's something to that when you talk to somebody just after they, you know, won a medal, or just after they lost the gold medal match or something, or, you know, where there's that raw emotion and, you know, you have the opportunity to talk to somebody and right when they're feeling something and to get that on camera, which you can share with people, it's powerful. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just really, it's an amazing experience. I've always sort of, you know, had an interest in radio and stuff like that, but I never thought I'd be doing this. And it's turned out to be like, you meet so many amazing people and hear about so many amazing stories, and which just helps me believe that that's kind of what's out there. Everybody has an amazing story and they don't all get told on radio or TV, but I think it's important that people realize that everybody's got cool things that they're doing and that's going on. And so it's great to get to meet them and talk to them about it.
Yeah. And it's nice to be able to share it with others around the world.
Boy, we can really resonate with Gary's comments there. We have met some unbelievably fascinating people by doing this show, and it's just been wonderful hearing their stories and getting to talk to them, and people from all over the world and all different kinds of stories. It's been great. Now for this week's final item, ice hockey for the blind. Well, we were a little dubious when Gary first mentioned the concept, but we looked at Courage Canada's website and watched some of the videos, and it looks pretty much the same as any other ice hockey game. So I guess there's no reason you can't do that either just because you can't see. The ice hockey intrigues me. You get a full team of blind people, two full teams of blind people swinging sticks and going at each other at high speeds on the ice?
Yeah, more or less. Basically, actually, last year, the organization I'm involved with as vice president is called Courage Canada, and we held our first ever blind ice hockey tournament. So it was a round robin with four teams with all visually impaired players. We use an adaptive puck, so it's a bit bigger and a bit slower, makes noise when it moves. And we have some slightly adapted rules, not too much. Basically, we have a one-pass rule when we go inside the red line. And we have some rules around safety. If the puck goes into the crease and stops moving, people will keep whacking at it like they do in the NHL. And also, scoring is in the bottom three quarters of the net because the puck doesn't really make any noise in the air. So just to make it a bit more fair for the goalies.
Well, I guess you can't be a real Canadian if you don't play ice hockey.
That's right. And we're trying to get Americans involved, too. So that's our hope, is our tournament next year. I think there's some interest in New York of getting a team going. So we might have some more Americans. We had one at the first tournament last year, a fellow from Indianapolis. Already a good start for our bilateral hockey tournaments.
So in terms of some of the details, how does one know they're inside the red line?
Once you get used to the ice surface, it's a bit of a spatial awareness. So obviously the first time you come out, and depending on your vision level, that'll kind of also affect sort of often what position you play and how you play. But a lot of people who are visually impaired have sort of less than 10% vision, and that can be either acuity, straight ahead vision, or in field. So, you know, a lot of people have field vision at different levels, so they can kind of see bits and pieces of where they are on the ice. Then also you just get a feel for, you know, if you skate a certain amount of time, then you're going to be at this sort of area in the ice. Stuff like that, I guess, is kind of the best way to describe it.
Well, that's interesting. Usually when people talk about being blind, they think of being totally blind and not seeing a thing. But in fact, many people do have some use of their vision, either light sensitivity or some amount of usable vision where they can get around and help their mobility a bit.
Yeah, sports basically has at the Paralympic level, a classification system that defines being quote unquote blind as below a certain level of vision, which makes you have a disability. Then it has categories of what different levels of sight you have. And so at the Paralympics, people notice that there's different, you know, events for the 100 in sprinting, for instance, as there's a B1, B2, and B3. And those are different levels of sight, so that a person with the same kind of vision is competing against a person with the same kind of vision and not getting some unfair advantage that one person can see a lane, another person is using a guide runner. So the same concept will eventually happen in hockey as well. We'll probably have a point system, much like wheelchair basketball, where you have to have a certain number of points and a person who's totally blind will be worth this much. And so you have to have a certain amount of totally blind people on the ice at all times or things like that. That's still in the development at this stage, though.
And I assume that all of those pads that hockey players wear are sufficient to keep people pretty safe.
Oh, yeah. And like face mask, helmets is all rules. Like we don't play without neck protectors, face mask and helmets, obviously, and all the hockey gear. So, yeah, that's the rules. It's about safety. And, you know, there's the odd collisions, but there's collisions in all hockey. We play no-hit hockey, and it's male or female can play. That's another reason why we have no-hit. But, I mean, collisions happen, right? They're blind people skating around on the ice. You can actually see the video of our tournament last year on couragecanada.ca. There's a tournament link. And people are kind of amazed that the speed of the game is actually much faster and much more organized than they pictured in their head. So that's really good to hear.
So if one wanted to find out more about that or become a participant, is that where they would go, to that website?
Yeah, check out couragecanada.ca. And there's all kinds of information about the organization, about the hockey tournament, and who to contact as far as getting involved in the tournament. And our tournament will be in Toronto. I think it's going to be the weekend after the Paralympics ends. More information will come out as we move forward on that.
Can you give the URL for the International Blind Sports Organization?
IBSASport.org.
And as usual, you don't have to be copying all that down yourselves. We have that in one simple place to get to, our show notes for this week's show. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net, look for the show notes for the show number, and all the other resources we have there.
That's it for show number 1342. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the recently released Bard mobile app for reading NLS books on your portable iOS device. We'll give an overview and demonstration of this very functional but simple to use app and how it can be used to download and read both audio and braille material wherever you are. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.